Okay, so this week is Parashat Ki Teitse, and I think that within Rashi there is a subtext that we will try to identify. I mean, the truth is it should be pretty easy to identify, but as far as I can tell, Rashi follows this all the way through until one critical moment, and then he pauses and he stops, and he's not willing to go that far, but I'll show you exactly what I mean. And if I would give a title to today, I would call it Consequences. Starts off with a mitzvah, which the truth is not all that easy to explain. Ki teitze l'milchama levecha, unetono Hashem lokech b'yodecha, v'shavita shavyo, v'ita b'shavyo eshi ifatoar. V'chashakta bo v'lakachta l'chol isha. So Torah starts with a mitzvah, which is known as the eshi ifatoar. The problem that we have, the problem that we have with the Eish HaTorah is that essentially it's not moral. I mean, I don't know how far I have to go to try to convince you of this, but it's essentially using force, using leverage, using physical, military, political, any force that you want in order to take somebody against their will and to take them physically, sexually, take them so... I would hope that most of you would agree with me that there is a moral issue over here. And the Gemara tells us this. Again, this is not my words. The Gemara tells us this, that this was something which was keneged Yetzirah. And the Rashi cites this as well, that this idea is keneged Yetzirah. The question is, what does that mean when it says keneged Yetzirah? But let's look at the way that Rashi phrases it. Rashi's in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Lo Dibra Torah Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara. That over here, that again, and I'm not 100% sure how to translate this Rashi. I'm going to say it the way that I think that most people do. That this is a mitzvah where the Torah spoke, Lo Dibra Torah, the Torah is only speaking, the problem is translating the negative over here into English, Ela Keneged Yetzer Hara, against the Yetzer Hara, She'im Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matira, and if God would not allow it, then someone's going to go against the Torah and do it anyway. So I want to pause here, even though what really concerns me today is the second part of Rashi. What did Rashi just now say? Rashi just now said the Torah knows this is wrong, or at least in the perception of the Gemara, looking back in the Torah, it knows this is wrong. The rabbis, the Gemara, cannot possibly accept this, but it's a concession to the Yetzer Hara. So what exactly does that mean? Does that mean on a moral level that today I'm supposed to draw the conclusion that if there's a law that people have a hard time keeping, so then the conclusion should be that we should find some kind of way to allow it, because that's what the Torah does over here. And by the way, if that is the case, forget about contemporary implications of it. Why did it choose this example? Why not say that Jews are going to have a hard time keeping kosher, or you can pick any of the things that you want? Why make a concession in this particular case? So, to again pause, and again before we get to the rest of the Rashi, the way that I see this is that war essentially is a breakdown of morality. It's not that this is the breakdown of morality. All of war has a breakdown of morality. I mean, what are we normally told? Listen, where do we get our basic morality? We probably got in kindergarten. Right? What did the in Hebrew it's the ganenet? What did the ganenet say? Don't take something which isn't yours, right? Don't hit anybody, don't kill anybody, right? What are you doing when you go to war? You're taking things that were not yours before, you're using force. This whole military perception, or I'll put it more, this whole experience of being in the battlefield can very easily be won with just like there's a breakdown in terms of normal morality. In terms of many areas, so now, okay, you just now took your sword, you slit this guy's throat open, right? You just now took these things, you just captured this land. And now you just saw this woman, oh, I should treat her with chivalry and treat her like a lady. But I think that's exactly the problem. The problem is once you have this breakdown, that's where it gets difficult. Did that make sense? Which means that within the whole context of war. Now, some of the commentaries go out of their way to tell us, including Rashi, go out of the way to tell us that the women were part of the war effort as well. By the way, that's to make us feel a little bit better about this and consider something. The way that battles take place today, and I'll say often, the way battles take place today is by using missiles, by using rockets, by using tanks. It was all hand-to-hand in those days. That's what battle was. It was a battlefield. It was hand to hand. And these women apparently were on the battlefield. Think of college football. They were cheerleaders. They were on the side, dressed in a provocative way, in order to serve as a distraction, in order to help their side's war effort, which means they are part of the war. But just in case anybody's confused over here, that does not give you license to rape them. Right? That meaning you just now may have gone a little bit forward. But what I am going to say again is that I can understand how within the context of battle is one where your entire moral system right now is being challenged. And therefore, at least the thought, again, you're getting into a primal mindset where people are acting based upon the most primal types of behavior, and it's within that context where this law, I believe, is being introduced. A couple of years ago, there was a woman who did a degree in Hebrew University, and this ended up making it to the college campuses and the whole anti-Israel movement, that she did a study and she came to this remarkable conclusion that there were virtually none, virtually means statistically there were no incidents of rapes between Israeli soldiers and Palestinians. And within this kind of situation, you would expect there to be much more. So therefore, she decided that this is another expression of Israel's racism, is that their women aren't even good enough to rape, and therefore we're so racist, and that's why... Incidentally, her professor, who was her advisor, got kicked out of Hebrew U for raping his students, which I just thought was great. He obviously wasn't biased, and he was equal opportunity. But again, you can't make. I'm saying you absolutely cannot make this stuff up. But despite something, which again they turn around and make it seem like, look how terrible we are, this is a wonderful statistic that Israeli soldiers would not behave like this. What really intrigues me is the rest of Rashi. I said the first part of Rashi is interesting. What intrigues me is the rest, because I think that this is a theme that he'll be using again and again in Ki Teitze. She'im ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu matira, yisena bi'isur. Aval im nisa, sofo liot sona. But if he does, because if the Torah doesn't allow it, he's going to do it anyway. And he's going to end up hating her. Shenemar acharav, because what does it teach afterwards? Ki tiena le'ish. Man's going to have two wives. One of them he likes, one of them he despises. It's going to then say, v'sofo le'lid mimeno ben tzor amorer. And eventually he's going to have a child who is going to be this rebellious child. L'kach nismachu parshiot halalu. Therefore, these parshiot are linked up one after the other way they're written in the narrative. Now, those of you who may not know, there's a number of times in the Gemara it talks about this theme, but in the more general sense. Are we Dorish Smuchot or are we not Dorish Smuchot? Is the fact that things are written in a sequence significant or not? The Gemara ends up saying that according to everybody, when it comes to Sefer Devarim, we are Dorish Smuchot. Because Sefer Devarim, there is a human element to it. What's the human element? Sefer Devarim, for the most part, is Moshe's speech. Right? Moshe's speech based on which content? Based on the content that God said to Moshe. God says to Moshe, he taught him this content. Moshe then, human element, Moshe then gives the speech. God then says to Moshe, now write down the speech that you gave. So the original content comes from Moshe, comes from God. The particular formulation comes from Moshe, but then the seal of approval comes back to God again, and that's Sefer Devarim. Okay, that's pretty much the relationship. But being that there's a human element in it, so therefore the Gemara seems to feel more comfortable going to everybody, including to Rabbi Yehuda, who normally wasn't Dorish Smuchot, to say in Sefer Devarim, things are written in sequence and we can learn from the sequence. So the same way over here, what was the sequence we learned from? It has a parsha, what's the first parsha? Of Eshif HaTor. What comes afterwards? A man's going to have two wives, one he likes, one he despises. He wants to give his primary inheritance to the wife of the one that he loves. And then it continues and it says, and if a man is going to have a ben saramora, a rebellious child, what did Rashi say? One leads to the other. So again, what did I say today's title is? Consequences. So what's Rashi saying? That think back of the consequences of what you're doing. Which by the way, that may be another reading of Keneged Yetzer Hara. What do I mean by that? I mean, I'm saying Keneged in a different way. Keneged Yetzer Hara, how did I explain it the first time? I said that it's a concession. How am I suggesting now? Exactly. It's a strategy. Which means, sure, this is allowed. Because, look, what happens? Yetzer hara is wonderful when it comes to short-term, act on the spur of the moment. Do this, I want this, and so on, I need this, whatever it is. That's how yetzer hara really works well. What's the strategy? The strategy, sure. You want her, no problem. By the way, let's go back to this primordial scene going off in the battlefield, and I am saying it a little bit differently than Rashi said it. This scene in the battlefield, you see this woman, she's attractive, she's been trying to distract you, somebody drags her off into the forest there, and he's about to rape her. Stop, what does the Chumash say? Sure you can rape her, no problem. Only one problem. What's the one problem? She gets the credit cards. Full access to your bank accounts and your retirement pension plan and everything, she has access to it. That may work better than any cold shower ever did. Which means when the Torah, when the Gemara is telling us this is Keneged Yetzer Hara, I can understand the Keneged Yetzer Hara being what? That, yeah, you're going to be with her, you're going to end up being married to her. You end up being married to her. That may stop the Yetzer Hara right there. Because again, how does the Yetzer Hara work? Yetzer Hara works by saying, I want something, I want it now. And what does the Yetzer Hara not think about? What word are we looking for? Consequences. The Yetzer Hara is saying, completely push it away, ignore the consequences. So that may be precisely the way that this works, Keneged Yetzer Hara. Now, by the way, is there any logic to this smuchen that if you take this woman, that you're going to end up in the Ben Sarah Morad? Is there any kind of logic to the sequence or of events, or just, of course it is. What's a Ben Sarah Morad? A rebellious kid. But what kind of rebellious kid? A kid who has very poor impulse control. Why does he have poor impulse control? Because his father has poor impulse control. His father's not able to control himself in terms of long-term consequences. He wants immediate gratification. So what happens with the child who wants immediate gratification, or who's brought up in an atmosphere of immediate gratification? And by the way, how easy it would be to educate this child. No, you can't just take what you want whenever you want it. That's how his mother came home. Because his father took what he wanted whenever he wanted it. By the way, on top of all this, what do you think is going to be when you have two different, and I'm not being careful now, two different religious backgrounds in one house? Why two different religious backgrounds? Believe it or not, the girl that he dragged home from the battlefield didn't go to Beis Yaakov. Most likely. Which means that what we're having over here is absolutely an alien influence in the house. You have over here somebody, okay, maybe he went to yeshiva, right? Okay, maybe he has a religious background, Jewish background. He just brought somebody who's coming from an absolutely, again, in the context of the Chumash, somebody coming from a family of idolatry, bring her in, give her a month to go on a quick conversion course. I don't know how this would ever fly today. I won't say anything about that, but give her a quickie conversion, okay, now you're 100% Jewish and now you have the kids. Now when you have the kids together, that's exactly what he's saying. Consequences. You don't want your kid to have poor impulse control, then you better practice better impulse control. So what I'm saying is that it's just a very, very clear process. Whose family suffered from this? David HaMelech clearly suffered from this. According to the Gemara, David's children were all the children of Ben Sarah Morah. Right, David goes and takes it, poor impulse control. Did it ever strike you that Avshalom was so good looking? According to the Gemara, his mother was a Eshish Vator. Same thing with Amnon, same thing with Tamar. How surprising it is that the story I'm talking about? That Amnon behaves the way that he does with his own sister Tamar. Very poor impulse control. And what happens to Amnon? Avshalom goes and kills him because he acted that way to his sister. Again, whole thing again, poor impulse control, which means whose family almost came completely destroyed because of this? David HaMelech did. Again, read through those chapters in Sefer Shmuel, and it's really quite astounding. But I said that's the way the Gemara understands this. So, are there any other examples of this idea of consequences as we continue on in this parsha? So, what I would suggest, I'm going to show a couple of them. If you go through the whole parsha with Rashi, you will find more than I'm pointing out right now. But as I said, Rashi seems to like this as a theme. And a matter of fact, the main word that I would look for in Rashi as I'm going is the word sofo. What does sofo mean over here? Sofo doesn't mean that literally at the end. What he means is that's where it's going to lead to. So just like he said over here, sofo liot sona, the end you're going to end up hating her, and afterwards v'sofo lo lead me mena ben sor mora. And again, I would just use the word consequences and tell this is where it's going to lead. When it comes to the Ben Sora Umore, why do we kill him according to Rashi, again based upon Chazal? This is what? Nidon Hashem Sofa, which is the exact same thing. Why? Because right now we're going to kill him while he's still innocent, because Bisofo Shel Davar, at the end of the day, what's going to happen? He's going to end up being guilty. And again, I'll read the words of Rashi. Uben Sora Umore. Neherag al shem sofo, higia Torah l'sof da'ato, sof shemecha. Again, I'm just going to stress, the word sof is used so many times in Rashi, again, until the one time where he doesn't use it. And that's going to be the most interesting time, where he won't use it. And that's what we'll have to try to figure out. Good. Afterwards, in Perikuf Aleph Pasakuf Bet, which comes immediately after the Ben Sora Mora, v'chia be'ish chet mishpat mavet, if somebody's going to be guilty of a death penalty. What does Rashi say? V'chia be'ish chet mavet, smicha raparshio magid, what does the sequence teach us? She'im chasim ala vavi v'imo, sof she'etzei l'tabur ra, v'yavor v'yirot v'yitchayv mitad v'beitin. That what's going to happen if you don't deal with this child who's rebellious when he's young? And by the way, this is very sad, because there's a real message here. The real message is you should have dealt with him beforehand. What's the real message that Rashi already told us? Is he never should have married her in the first place. But you should have educated him better. You have to break that kind of a cycle. You didn't break the cycle. What's going to end up happening? We already know it. We already know either he's going to be killed when he's innocent because his parents turn up, or he's going to end up being killed afterwards. So Rashi does play that out over here. And as I said, he spells it out, unfortunately. More examples, which actually maybe surprises you. Perikuf Bet Pasuk Chet. Here Rashi flips it around. Pasuk Vav was Shiluach HaKen to Shalach Tishlach Ta'im in Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Chet was Ki Tivne Bayit Chadash Vasita Ma'akeh L'Gagecha, right, making a Ma'akeh on your house. Listen to Rashi. Ki Tivne Bayit Chadash Im kiyamta mitzvah shiluach haken, sovcha livnot bayit chadash. V'tikayim mitzvat ma'akeh, shemitzvah gorer mitzvah. So it's very interesting. By the way, it's also interesting that Rashi didn't use that adage, what could he have said? Now you go looking backwards, what could he have said? Aver gorer taver. He didn't say that. But over here he does say it. V'tagia lekerem v'sadu lebagadim na'im, lekach nisvichu parshiot halalu, which he actually just now went in the future to the next couple of parshiot as well. So Rashi over here, is, I'm going to say it again, he is looking at Parsha Kitetze, which is full of mitzvot. And what he's telling us to do is to use the rule of smichut, to look at context, to see how one negative thing then flows into other negative things, but now we see the flip side of this is true as well. You can see how something positive will then flow into positive things. So again, he does this by the mitzvot lo taseh and by the mitzvot taseh. And as I said, there are a lot more examples. Let me just pick out a couple. In Perek Kaf Dalet, he does this regarding marrying a divorcee. Now, certainly people could say this was not very politically correct, but he says it. She's going to marry Le'ish Acher, Ein ze ben zugo shel rishon, hu otzi rishon mitoch beto v'zeh hechnisa. Again, Rashi, there's a big machloket among the Tanayim under what conditions a divorce can take place. Are you familiar with the machloket? What's the most radical position? Well, you have to be a little more careful. If you're already going to quote it, you have to be more careful. Beit Shammai, if I'm not mistaken, says, ki yimtza. Again, what does the Chumash actually say? Look at Perikuf Dalet. Kikach ish isha uva Allah. One second. Okay. Kikach ish isha uva Allah. By the way, there's many, many examples of marriage in this week's parsha. Hardly any of them are the romantic type. Ki yikach ish isha uva Allah, v'ya im lo timtzachein be'enav, ki matzaba ervat davar. Pshat in Chumash is ervat davar. Beit Shammai says that how do you get divorced? You get divorced only in the case that you really found that there is ervat davar. That means she cheated. That, by the way, that sounds like pshat. We then find other opinions saying, for example, it doesn't say that she cooked, that she burnt the cholent. It says tafshilo. She burnt his food, which I think it's a good deal. I think that you're dealing already with a dysfunctional family, so it's dysfunctional enough that they're already fighting and she burns his food. It doesn't say that she burnt the food. Again, maybe I'm wrong with that. Rabbi Akiva has perhaps the most radical. You remember what Rabbi Akiva said? Rabbi Akiva says, even if he finds a better looking one, you say, hold it, what are you talking about? But the truth is that Rabbi Akiva is therefore the most makel. Because what's Beit Shammai saying? Only if a marriage disintegrated to the point that she's already cheating on. And what does Beit Hillel said? No, there's already fighting tension now. She's burning his food. What's Rabbi Akiva saying? He already has a wandering eye. So again, who's most machmir, who's most makel? Rabbi Akiva is being the most makel, even though it sounds the most sexist. Yes? Yes. I think it's significant that the Gemara talks about what should the attitude be when a woman is in nida. It says, when a woman is in nida, maybe she shouldn't wear nice clothing, she shouldn't wear makeup, she shouldn't look good. Rabbi Akiva matters everything. He says she should put on makeup, she should wear nice clothing and everything, but you realize Rabbi Akiva is the same one who said that if he sees a better looking one. So he's saying, no, make sure that that this marriage will be a healthy marriage in every way. So again, I think that's Rabbi Akiva going lishitaso. Over here, this woman who was guilty of ervat davar. So again, this is not the halacha. The halacha is we don't follow Beit Shammai. Unfortunately, it may be the pshat and the chumash, right? You're not disturbed by this, correct? Just because something sounds like pshat doesn't necessarily mean that that's the halacha. But over here, it says ervat davar. Then it says, now this other person who married her, so did he? How did I start all this? He married a divorcee. I said it's very politically incorrect. You have a woman who divorced for all kinds of reasons. The marriage didn't work out. He was a creep. Again, we go on and on and on. But over here, within the context of the pshat, what was the issue here? That she was guilty of ervat davar. It says, usnea ha'isha acharon. She marries somebody else. So what is it, again, that Rashi said here? Hakatav mevasosha soful lisnota. Why? V'im lo kovato. Shenemar. Okay. Over here. Sorry. Einze ben zugo sharishon hu hutsi risha'a mitoch beito v'zehichis. So Rashi did the same thing again here that he did in the beginning of the parasha. Here's a woman who's been cheating on her husband. She goes and marries this other guy. She marries the other guy, and he realizes that she's not a very trustworthy woman, so therefore he's going to end up hating her as well. So again, as I said, everything I just now said within Rashi is extremely politically incorrect, but there's a parallel to the very beginning of the parasha, because Rashi's doing the same thing again. Sofo, this is what's going to end up happening in this kind of situation. Again, I could easily say he was at fault. That's not what Rashi, the scenario that Rashi sees, because he is as much as possible trying to explain the pshat. So what's he saying? Woman cheated on her first husband. You're going to marry her. I mean, let me put it this way. There are times that people cheat on their spouses and then marry somebody else. Or they cheat and they marry this other person. So why do they think then that their spouse who was cheating with them won't cheat on them with somebody else afterwards? Right? Just like you were the younger thing at one point, someone else will be at some point. But maybe we'll come back to this later on. I'm not sure if we'll get to it. Bereshit Shemot, Bereshit Noach. But in the olden days, people used to take two wives. They would take one wife having children, and they'd take another wife for a trophy wife. One for which was very functional. Your job is to take care of your job is to have children and to be function, and your job is to be good looking and, you know, go out to parties with me. And they were very moral in those days. In these days, people do it differently. They have them sequentially. They have the different wives because we're far more ethical today. Okay, let's go back. In Perek Kaf Hei, we have similar things regarding arguments to physical fighting, which, by the way, that's really what you should have learned in kindergarten, that people start saying things and that leads on to that. That we hear as well. We're going to skip that. That's in Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Yud Aleph. Also Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Aleph, we see some of this as well. I want to skip to where Rashi didn't do this, and I want to try to consider this a little bit more. Let's go towards the end of Kaf Hei, if you have it in front of you. Okay, Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Yud Gimel. Lo yelecha bikischa even va'oven gdola uktana. So in order to really understand this, go back to historical context. You can still see it today, but I mean, just the world's a little different. When you buy something, they weigh it. How do they used to weigh it? You would weigh it with a scale. What would the scale have? The scale would have stones. So over here, you would have a stone which is worth a certain amount of weight. You would put something on it in terms of the scale. You would then be able to pay your price. What would happen if you had different sets of stones for your in order to weigh things? Which means whenever you bought produce, you used one. Whenever you sold it, you use a different one. Which one would you use when you buy? Right. That's exactly what the Torah says, word for word. It says, again, Lo yebikischa even va'oven. Don't have two different stones. Gedola uktana. One which is larger, one which is smaller. A number of years ago, I was in South Africa, and Yisachar friend tells the same story because he was also in South Africa, and he met the same person. So I'm not ripping up his story. It's my story. I was there. It was probably this time of year. It was by Elul, because I was giving a talk about tshuva, and somebody, it was a class to women, this at least 20 years ago, this story happened. And because what I remember about the whole trip was they wanted to get their money's worth. So they had me speaking like 8 times during the day or something, like going from school to shul to ladies' auxiliary, back to another school, to whatever. They just had me speaking all day. And there was this one like lunch of women, and I was something about tshuva, I remember what it was, and somebody raised their hand and said, you know, if you're not religious, then do you have a share in the world to come? Right? So what's the answer? So some woman said, can I answer? So I said, great, go ahead. So she started to tell the following story. She said that she was sitting there in front of me with a shetel on and whatever, looked very, very religious. And she said that she was raised not as a religious person. Those of you who don't know anything about the South African community, a great deal of the community became Balei Tshuva over the years, probably more so percentage-wise than any other place in the world. Why this is, I can't tell you why. I could tell you why it is, but it was absolutely amazing. Almost all of the families originally came from Vilna, or the surrounding places of Vilna. They got there, people didn't keep Shabbos, but that you had people there, the old-timers, who were these mythical people who would smoke cigarettes and learn Gemara on Shabbos. Right, in terms of like the old generation, but their kids were raised just to be nice South Africans, and again, very, 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 very little of Torah, but a number of different things happened at once, and there became a whole community of Balei Tshuva. So anyway, so this woman tells the following story, that her father had died 20 years before that, whole family was not religious, was buried in South Africa, but her mother lived a good number of years. Her father didn't keep anything, maybe Yom Kippur, but nothing. Didn't keep kosher, Shabbos, anything. So over the next 20 years, till her mother died, the whole family became religious. Everybody became Balei Tshuva, everybody became religious, some of them moved to Israel. And her mother, before she died, said, I don't want to be buried in South Africa, I want to be buried in Israel, and move daddy over as well after I die. The mother passed away, buried her in Israel, and then they dug up the father, brought him over in a casket, and he gets to the cemetery. Actually, they open up the casket, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, already by the airport, the Chevra Kaddish, whatever, they take the body, and the body was, again, he's been dead for 20 years, he was absolutely complete. He looked like he died yesterday. The son-in-law had traveled with the family, and they asked, you know, what did he look like? She said, like the picture, you know, on the wall. He looked exactly like it, no whatsoever. So the Chevra Kaddish had no idea who it was. They started screaming. And they said, Tzadik, Tzadik, Sholem, Sholem. And he said, Tzadik, he must be a Tzadik, he's a Sholem, because they knew he died 20 years ago. And so this woman then said, my husband wasn't a Tzadik. My husband, well, he wasn't from, he wasn't sure, he didn't keep anything. So at the time, they asked a couple of rabbis, can you explain? So they started to ask, what was he like? So he said, one thing about it, he was honest in business. And he worked in diamonds, as many people in South Africa did. And they said that most of them had different scales when they would buy and when they would sell. So when they would buy mainly from the black workers who were working the mines, they would come out and bring the diamonds, they would have one scale, underpay them, and then when the people came in to buy it, they would have another scale, and then they would sell it. Because my father, he absolutely detested that. Again, I don't know, because he knew Pasuk and Chumash. He detested it, they said, and he gave the workers a fair price, and he sold for a fair price. He only had one scale. He was like the only guy, I don't want to say Lashon Hara and everybody, he said he was like the only guy who had one scale. So, you know, they opened up the Pasuk, and what does the Pasuk say? And that's exactly what the Chevra Kaddisha screamed. Sholem, Sholem, Tzadik, Tzadik. So it says, must be, for that merit is why he remained. As I said, that story, I heard from the family when I was there. Okay. Continuing in the Pasuk, Evin Shlema Vitzedek, Yelocha, Loch, Eifa Shlema Vitzedek, Yelocha, Leman Yerichu Yomecha, Aldama Shalakecha, Noten Loch. In order that you have a long life. Now, the next two words are interesting, or the whole next pasuk. Kito avat Hashem Elokecha kol oseh eile. Sorry. Kito avat Hashem Elokecha kol oseh eile kol oseh avel. What do those words mean? Kito avat Hashem Elokecha. It's an abomination. Kol oseh eile. Whoever does the kol oseh avel, whoever does this miscarriage of justice. What word did you have? Okay. So religious Jews like to use the word to'eva only when it comes to certain sins. I mean, it's more than that. Is that religious Jews have a visceral response to certain sins, and they feel, this is a to'eva. So the question is, do they have the visceral response because it says to'eva, or do they have a visceral response because they have a visceral response? Because it happens to be that we have a beautiful white-collar crime over here, which the Torah labels a to'eva, and do people feel the same way towards white-collar criminals? The person who I heard really make an entire discussion about this was Rabbi Lichtenstein, and he called upon the community as a whole, and this discussion, if you could not figure out, was a discussion about homosexuality, but that was his question. Why is it that people go screaming to'eva when it comes to one area, and other places that the Chumash says, and other places as well? I mean, if you look at Rashi over here, Rashi quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei, but we'll see soon where he does. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Mozne mirma to'avat Hashem ve'evin shleim yitzono. So again, multiple places, this kind of white-collar crime is called a to'eva. So, full stop. But what was the whole discussion today? What were we supposed to be talking about? Consequences. What's the next pasuk? Zochor et asher asalucha Amalek. So this leads directly in to Parshat Amalek. Now, all of us know Amalek is not a good guy, right? I mean, the people, these are not good people. Look what Rashi writes over here. Zochor et asher asar lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzeitchem mitzrayim. Rashi writes, Zochor et asher asar lecha im shikarta b'midot, if you lied when it came to the weights, uv'mishkolot, like sizes and weights, havedoeg, what does havedoeg mean? You should worry, migerui ha'oyev, from being attacked by the enemy, shenemar mozne mirma tovat Hashem. Uktiv betray, and it says afterwards in Mishle, vazodun v'yavol kalon, which means Rashi seems to be saying that if you're guilty of these kinds of crimes, you're going to be attacked by your enemies. What word did Rashi use, which was interesting over here, where he was not willing to go far enough? Yeah, he didn't use the word self. What word did he use? Have doeg. So again, if I would have started with this, none of you would have been troubled by this. Okay, have doeg. Okay. So if you want to tell me that when it comes to bad things, he doesn't want to say it, he said it already a couple times in the parasha. I didn't do all of them with you. A couple times he says, you do this, sofo, that this is going to happen. Sofo, sofo, sofo. He used it a whole bunch of times. Rashi was not willing to, you know, nail it one last time over here, and he replaces the word that he could have used, sofo, and over here he says, have doeg. Be worried. Now, what does it perhaps come down to? Is how much you really want to blame the Jews when things happen to them. You know, how much you want to blame the victim. Let's read a little bit further and you'll see exactly what I'm saying. Because Rashi here stops. He leads us to that point, and as I said, then he stops. Zochor et asher salacham aleik b'derech v'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim. Asher korcha b'derech v'yizanev v'cha kol ha'nechesh shalim acharecha v'ata ayef v'yageya v'lo yorei elokim. So now help me translate that pasuk. Asher korcha b'derech, which had happened upon you along the way, v'yizanev b'chol kol anecha shalim, that's really interesting phraseology, v'yizanev b'chol kol anecha shalim. By the way, do you hear the nachash in there at some place? Do you hear the zanov of the nachash? V'yizanev b'chol kol anecha shalim, no? What's your translation? And you became entangled or ensnared by all. Oh no, he translates Rashi. Okay, but zenevuk kol necha shalim. You became entangled by all kinds of things to be stumbling upon. Acharecha va'ata ayef v'yageya, and you were. What does ayef v'yageya mean? The lo yirei elokim. Excuse me. The lo yirei elokim. Okay. So the question over here in the pasuk is, which really shouldn't be a question. The question is, who didn't fear God? So when you read this pasuk, who was the subject? Now, I will allow that there's an esnachta over here in the middle. So Rashi reads, is talking about Amalek. Amalek was not, they didn't fear God at all, and Amalek then went and they attacked them. I'm not willing to give a scorecard of numbers how many. Many commentaries do not agree with Rashi. The Mechilta doesn't agree with Rashi. The Sifri does not agree with Rashi. And they all say that this is talking about Am Yisrael was Lo Yirei Elokim. So, okay, it makes sense. Let's go back to Sefer Shemot for a second. In Sefer Shemot, in Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Ched, it says Vayavo Amalek v'lachem Yisrael b'rifidim. Amalek came and fought with Am Yisrael. The pasuk beforehand was the end of this whole discussion of the Jews didn't have any water, and they started to complain, and Moshe said, and they're screaming, and at the very end it says, "Ve'yikor she'em akom Masa u'Meriva." This place was called Masa u'Meriva. Auriv, what does Riv mean? It's contentious. It's a fight. Auriv b'nei Yisrael va'al nasotam et Hashem, and how they tried God, tested God, lame or saying, what was that Am Yisrael said? Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu amayim. Imayim, does God exist or not? Right? Is there such a thing as God or not? Am Yisrael questions the existence of God, and I'm going to say this many, many times this year. They're out of their minds. They question the existence of God. When is this? Context. After they saw 10 plagues, after the sea was split, after, what do they eat for breakfast that morning? They have no water. What do they eat for breakfast that morning? Man. Right? pastrami sandwiches falling from the sky. They had man for breakfast. And now they're saying, does God exist or not? Is God with us or not? And they're beginning to question God. Asher korcha baderech. Rashi there gives three interpretations. Asher korcha baderech. They happened upon you along the way. By the way, why did Amalek come at that point? Who's Amalek? I just want to tie all this a little bit more. Who's Amalek? Amalek comes from Esav. Good. Esav. How did Esav... First of all, good. This is... Okay, good. You're back over there. First of all, this is Amalek is Esav's child by having a concubine, not through a wife, which itself is interesting, through Timnah. Secondly, good. Let's go back to Esav a second. Esav is somebody who we're told eats an incredible amount. He's involved in killing and all kinds of things. Okay, he comes. Give me this food. I'm going to drop dead. Right, and right. No. Say. He was. Yaakov says, "Give me the birthright." Well, what did he get for the birthright? There was a bartering here. What did he get? What did the birthright contain? The birthright contained the birth. No. The birthright. If you'll ask me, go ask me. Good. The birthright contained the Brit Bein Abtarim. It's before the brachot. What's the Brit Bein Abtarim? Who is going to be the one who's going to live up to the covenant that God made with Avram? What's the content of the covenant? You're going to get the land of Israel. That's the good part. What's the bad part? You're going to work for 400 years to get it. A person like Esav, is he interested in a 400-year investment? Or does he want immediate gratification? Give me the food, I'm going to die. So what we have over here is this immediate gratification. Give me food, I'm going to die. And then what does it say at the end? Yaakov says, give me this. And he goes, fine. He gives him the food. And what does it say? Vayivez Esav et ha-bechora. Bless you. He detested the bechora. He didn't want that responsibility. So Am Yisrael goes down to Egypt. We work for hundreds of years. We end up coming out. As soon as we come out, then what happens? Vayavo Amalek. Then Amalek wakes up. Oh, you know, now they're willing to mix it up. Now they're willing to revisit the entire situation, which means Amalek is not, they want immediate gratification. Esav wants immediate gratification. Yaakov is willing for long-term investment. All the people going to lose their money in the market this week are all the people who are going to move very, very quickly, right? Sell when it's low instead of riding out the storm. Yaakov, long-term investment policy, strategy. Right? He's willing to take on for his children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, long-term investment. Right? That. Correct. Long-term investment strategy. You all with me? So then what ends up happening? Esav then going through Amalek immediate, and you'll notice how many times you'll find in all the stories of the Amalek, it's always Hayom, and the Jewish response is always Machar. We always push them off to the next day. It's always the next day, which drives them crazy, of course. Even, by the way, in the battle, it's also a pasuk, which is very strange. Even the battle in Perek Yud Zayin, Moshe says to Yeshua, "V'yom Moshe Yeshua, b'char lanu Hashem v'tzeilachem ba'amalek machar." So is it v'tzei malek machar, or is it machar anochin yitzev roshu gevul? There's a machlokes, but the Chazal tell us this is one of the cases that we ain lo hachra. We don't know the right way to read this. So is it that he says, "Okay, go fight them tomorrow"? By the way, again, think about the battlefield. Amalek is coming. They got the drums banging on the drums. We're ready to fight. Let's go. Bring it on. And it was, tomorrow, start without us. We'll be there soon. We don't have time now. We're busy. Time to daven Maariv. We can't fight with you now. Amalek is going crazy. They want now. They want a battle now. Sorry. Tomorrow. And that's always the response is tomorrow. Haman, it's tomorrow. It's always tomorrow. So if we go back and we realize this is exactly the issue. It's this Am Yisrael ends up acting like Amalek. We end up acting like Yesh Hashem b'kirbeinu ayim v'yovo Amalek. That's what Chazal was trying to tell us, or for that matter, it could be what Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to tell us when he presents these psukim with this context. If you start to not believe in God in terms of your finances, and you're going to help God make sure that you have money, how are you going to help God? You're going to use different size, you know, you're going to doctor the scales. You're going to not have emuna, which then is parallel to you don't have yirat elokim, just like we saw yesh Hashem rukabeinu ayin. Therefore, the pasuk says v'lo yirat elokim. You don't fear God, which means telling over the story of Amalek is precisely being told over yirat Moshe Rabbeinu, because we're acting like Amalek when we don't have yirat Shemayim, even when it comes to a particular to'eva. Which to'eva? The to'eva of this type of white collar crime is really, when it comes down to it, a total lack of emunah, not really believing that God is in the business. God, meaning, basically, God is in shul. You get to shul in the morning, God is in shul. You leave shul, God is still there. God does not come out to any other, you know, place. God is not interested in other things. He's only interested in what Jews do in shul, and that's all. We can throw God a bone, we can say a couple of things, say nice things about him. Okay, look, Adola, Giba, Ranoro, you made God's day. And then basically you have license to do whatever you want. So that's exactly the way that, by the way, all the Balei HaTosfot, as far as I can, all the ones who have commentaries on the Chumash, I found three different ones. All of them disagree with Rashi. The Chizkuni, for example, says over here, V'od shehayita lo yirei Elokim kedeita b'mechilta. Acher ma'omrim v'lo yirei Elokim elu Yisrael shehayu b'hem mitzvot v'lo kiyumom. If you were fearing God, Amalek wouldn't have a chance. The Datzakenim and Bali Tosfos say, the Hadar Zakenim, the Rush says it. I said four different ones, if you include the Chizkuni. They all go in the same direction as saying, no. Is that the way, reason this is juxtaposed is for this exact reason. When you act like Amalek, Amalek is going to come. You have lack of Amunah, Amalek is going to come. As I said, Rashi stopped. Rashi did not want to say Sofcha. He didn't want to say Sofo, this is what's going to happen. Rashi wants to be doeg. Rashi over again, he did this all parsha long. At this point, he didn't, maybe he doesn't want to give an ayin hara. He doesn't want to say bad. Maybe he knew the way that certain people were doing business. He said, you guys better worry about it. Don't behave like this. As I said, the other mefarshim, they don't hold back. They use the same type of a logic over here, and they follow even to this last example as well. But as I said, that's what's the topic of this parsha? It's consequences. Why is it consequences? Because in Sefer Devarim we have smuchim. Why particularly in this parsha? Because there's so many mitzvot in this parsha. Being that there's so many mitzvot, I can just say that, you know, basically, I don't remember how many, 57? Second most in the Torah. There's so many mitzvot in this parsha, so therefore basically Moshe just, you know, rolled the dice and they came out in any sequence they did. No. They're in a particular order. And by the way that following the order, you can see not only there's a sequence, but there's also consequences going from one to the other. And that's why, that there's, again, if you want to use a lack of a better word, that Moshe Rabbeinu puts this together in the sequence in terms of Musar. There's something to be learned by it, both on the negative and on the positive. We saw negative examples that you start off with, you hit on the Eshei Fator and you drag her home by the hair. How in the world do you think the kid that you're going to have from this relationship is going to end up being? What do you think is going to end up happening? And those are all those negative things. On the other hand, it talks about this other type of idyllic, beautiful relationship. You can do things the right way. You can have compassion for the bird. You can then end up having a house. You can then build the same, and then it's a mitzvah, great mitzvah, and you have positive things as well. So basically, it's put in front of us. We get to choose. We get to choose the consequences that we put ourselves in. The sequences are there. And we get to choose which way we want to go. So as I said, that seems to be the way of Rashi all the way through, even though at the very end, he doesn't want to pull the trigger and say, this is what's going to happen over there, and maybe Baruch Hashem he didn't. But it is interesting that most people, if you ask them, give me an example of a pasuk in the Torah, a sin in the Torah, where it uses the term to'eva, they'll be very quick to pull out some, but my suspicion is they may not pull out this one.